views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Voices of Women is a talk radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
Well, welcome to Voices of Women. I'm the founder of Women of Wisdom, and I just want to share how we're coming on a big year. It's our 25th year, and it's very exciting, but we're hoping that we're going to be able to stick around for this 25th year. We are doing lots of fundraising, and I just want to point out Tuesday, May 3rd, next Tuesday, is Give Big Day in Seattle. It's run by Seattle Foundation. So donations that you give to Women of Wisdom on Give Big Day is very appreciated, and it gets stretched by donations from Seattle Foundation. And so that's fabulous. And so that just helps us be able to stay in the game and do the powerful work working with women and empowering them. So where you go is to www.givebig.seattlefoundation.org, and then you just search for Women of Wisdom Foundation, and you can pre-set up your donation. Even though it's going to come through on May 3rd, you can set it up today. And we appreciate all and any donations to help. Well, have a great 25th year. So today my guest is Peggy Ayers. Peggy is an author, artist, social critic, and cultural visionary. And she is occupied with challenging worldviews, contributing to the paradigm shift, and working with the decolonization process in herself and others. A Celtic animist who sees the world through a spiritual lens, she is a devotee of nature-based culture and all that is sacred to the earth. Peggy Ayers is an advocate for our interconnection with earth community and the recovery of authentic ancestral wisdom and traditions for all people. She lives in the countryside of Peterborough, Ontario, Canada. It's near Toronto. And she's here with her new book, Ancient Spirit Rising, Reclaiming Your Roots and Restoring Earth Community. So welcome, Peggy.
Well, thank you, Chris. So nice to be here.
I'm more than halfway know like how you were inspired to write this book. What started it for you?
Well, I'm very lucky. I live in an area of Ontario, Canada. There's a lot of First Nations presence nearby. And I have a lot of friends over the years that are First Nations, so I'm very lucky that way. And we have Trent University here too, a lot of Indigenous events happen there. There's an Indigenous studies program. And every year they have an elders gathering. I go most years I've gone to this gathering. And I think it was about 6 years ago I heard an elder say at one of the gatherings, he said a very short little statement, and it just completely stunned me. And this short little thing he said took me on a huge journey of discovery and writing. And I should tell you what he said. He said that everyone needs to return to their own Indigenous knowledge. And I was just stunned by this remark. It was like he was saying two things. I think he was commenting on cultural appropriation, that there are many non-Native people, you know, taking up Native identity and practicing Native spirituality, and they're not actually of a Native heritage. But I also think he was really giving us a great blessing, because he was actually saying that we all do have our own Indigenous knowledge. So what a revelation that was for me, and I had to write about it and where are our traditions located, what kind of work is already being done, and what can we do better, you know, to reclaim the old ways. So that was the starting point for my book.
Oh, yeah. Well, that and that is quite a statement. When you get kind of that shockwave of like, oh, my goodness, yeah. what is this? But then you had to have done a huge amount of research because all the quotes you have in the book and the footnotes, it's quite amazing.
I think that's the librarian in me came out there at some point. I've always loved reading and literature, and I think I kind of thought, well, I'm doing a book. I don't want to do another book for many, many years. So I just kind of poured a lot into the one book. So it's kind of like, I don't want to do it again type of thing. So I really spent a lot of time on it. It took 3 years to write.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. and so we're looking at a rise. Well, I don't know. I think it's been going on for a good 20 years. The rise of the old ways and timeless knowledge of indigenous societies. You know, and we also have the ancient matriarchies. And why do you think this is on the rise again today?
Well, yes, I just think that it's this complete paradigm shift happening all over the planet pretty much. And I think we have to shift away from all the, you know, the dominator models that we learned so much about and how not to be that way anymore. And every single movement, like I trace through my book, there must be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different movements. And they're all different. But they're all kind of working toward the goal of moving away from the patriarchal values, you know, reaffirming our connection to the earth, and going back to these ancient studies. There's never been a time in human history when we've had so much wonderful access to so much information. And, you know, the explosion of matriarchal studies has been, you know, a huge inspiration for so many people. And before I wrote the book, that was one of my main interests, was just focusing on the ancient matriarchy. So it's part of the whole paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And in the book, you focus, a lot of focus is on the appropriation of indigenous knowledge and white privilege. And so why is the cultural appropriation an important issue right now?
Well, I just think people, you know, aren't aware, and there is a relationship on Turtle Island. Our ancestors did come here and colonize these lands. They did it through a lot of violence and a lot of trauma that was experienced by the First Nations people. There was genocide, all kinds of horrific things. That's our cultural group did that. You know, I'm not saying everybody get guilty, and I think of guilt is a useless emotion. I'm certainly not advocating for that. But we have to at some point take responsibility, and we are on the colonizer side of the equation. We're not the colonized people, we are the colonizer. And so for us to take elements of spiritual or cultural property from a culture that's historically been the colonized is the wrong thing to be doing. I mean, they're still in recovery. First Nations are still in recovery, and this is not the right time to be taking elements of their cultural and spiritual property for ourselves. And we, you know, I think that so many people in these earth nature spirituality movements just weren't aware that anyone would object to it, or, you know, the boundaries weren't even there in the beginning. So people are just unaware, but it's never too late to do the right thing. I certainly advocate for that in my book. And First Nations are in most cases horrified by a lot of non-Native people, you know, taking up Native tradition. The worst part of it is when you offer these teachings for a fee, like when you're charging money for the services, that's pretty much the worst. But it's a continuum, like, you know, these different ways of appropriating.
Right. But you're talking about them, the people who are teaching Native American, First Nation ways, and they're not Native American. They're not First Nation people.
Yeah.
And we know, you know, we've heard of people who do that.
Oh, yeah. I can name names, but I won't.
Yeah, no, you don't need to.
No,
but but there's also a desire for that spirituality, getting back to that grassroots of that earth spirituality that you feel in the First Nation, Native American population. And people want to explore that. And so sometimes people go to teachings by some Native Americans want to teach to the white people because they feel it's we're needing something and people are looking for something. And so there's that element that's I don't know that is so wrong in itself. I think it's wrong if you then turn around and you teach it, because it's not. Just because you've taken a class doesn't mean you know it, and that it's part of your ability to teach it, you know.
Tradition. Yeah. And I think, like, that is so absolutely true. And I think it may take a decade or two to actually, you know, learn enough about a tradition to be able to practice it accurately. So a couple of workshops are not going to get you there. So it's a very superficial undertaking. And being invited into First Nations spaces is excellent. I mean, we do have to learn about the cultures that were here on Turtle Island before we came along. And, you know, the more we can learn about any First Nation, the better. But it's just like there is a boundary there, and learn all you want, but it's not our knowledge to help ourselves. In the end, we have our own traditions. Hopefully somewhere. That's what my book's about, finding your own ancestral traditions. It's quite exciting work.
Yeah. Well, I have to say it's a little confusing in your book, because I get the feeling like it's not okay to study it. But then I get, you know, some things you say, well, it is. It's, but what you're really getting across is inappropriately the appropriation of it, taking it over as if it's your own versus taking the knowledge and making use of that knowledge in your life, because it's all learning, you know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's where the boundary is. You can learn all you want, but to actually practice it and make it your own tradition is kind of where the boundary is. I mean, there are people that are, like, adopted into First Nations, too, so there's not a hard and fast rule. The boundaries can be a little bit nebulous, and I'm not an authority, and I'm not a cultural appropriation cop. I don't want to put myself into that role. So, and the situation is different for every person, but, you know, just generally speaking, these are things that I think we need to be aware of. And if there's a better alternative than offending a First Nation who is struggling to reclaim their own traditions, and you're just waltzing in and going, well, I want them too, and they're not even halfway through their own recovery process, it just seems to me like it's not the right time.
Yeah, and there's an element of respect that's needed. Well, this is Christina. You're listening to Voices of Women. We'll come back and talk more with Peggy Ayers.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day, we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer, and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Do you want to achieve your goals? Do you want to strengthen relationships with others? Do you want to improve your financial status? Colette Marie Steffen is partnering with Mark Kettenbach to bring you an energetic upgrade online experience launching in April. Unfold and develop your full potential. Visit energeticupgrade.com today for more information. That's energeticupgrade.com.
The doctor is in. Tune in to the hit show, The Psychic Love Doctor, with host Deborah Lee. Deborah's life-affirming, highly perceptive reading method has taught Deborah how to zero in on specific problems with relationships, career pursuits, and current roadblocks to success and happiness. Join Deborah Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific, and for a special broadcast the second Thursday of every month at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Sky Siegel co-hosts one of today's most popular psychic shows, Angels and Answers, with Artie Hoffman as she communicates healing messages from the spirit world. These messages can be astounding, enlightening, and life-changing. Born with the God-given talent of inner guidance and the amazing ability to heal, Sky has healed thousands of people. Schedule a reading with Sky now. Call 908-500-1474 and visit skyofangels.com.
Hey everyone, meet my friends at the Maka team. The Ancient Inca root vegetable maca is known worldwide for its huge array of health benefits. As a family-run company of true maca specialists, the maca team is here to bring you the best maca the Peruvian mountains has to offer. Yellow maca, used to promote endurance, vitality, fertility, hormone health, and much more, is on sale now. I love it. Visit themacateam.com to order yours now. Themacateam.com.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I am speaking with Peggy Ayers. She's the author of Ancient Spirit Rising. So we were just talking about the misappropriation of Indigenous knowledge and white privilege and for us to be aware of this. So one of the things in your book, you take a pretty hard stance on New Age, pagan, and goddess spirituality movements being guilty of cultural appropriation. And I would love for you to talk about that.
Yeah, I just noticed over the years that it's a phenomenon. Even when you try to explain to people that there may be a boundary, they have a huge resistance. But I think that would be normal. I mean, if you've created an identity and if you've called yourself a shaman for many, many years, you're going to have a real terrible resistance to thinking that you may have to change, or, you know, they've got an established business even over the years. So it's quite a shocking thing if people hear that, well, maybe that's, you know, not the appropriate kind of spirituality. I mean, yeah, it's a difficult conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't just me telling people this. It's First Nations themselves have come out in a hugely vocal way, and they are the ones that are, you know, they've created the United Nations Declaration of Indigenous Rights. I mean, there's documents, there's tribunals. That's almost like to the point where they would like to make it a legal issue. So, you know, to do with identity theft. So it is a serious, serious issue. And there's a call-out culture that exists, and it can be kind of a harsh conversation. And I understand that, you know, people have invested a lot of time into their identity, but it just begs the question, why are people creating their own identity? Like, is that, I don't know, we're taught in the society, you can be whoever you want. And I don't know if it's something we have to look at in a little more depth, but maybe there's something a little bit strange about people having to just create identities that aren't actually authentically are.
Yeah, and there's also this, commercialization of, come to this workshop and become the goddess that you are, or, you know, you're going to become a shaman taking this workshop, and, you know, working who go down to South America work with a real shaman. And so it's not just Native American, you know, they're studying with somebody and learning how to live it within themselves. And so sometimes you can tell the difference between somebody who's authentically studying and teaching and someone who's, you know, they're on that wavelength of, oh, you know, this is my path, I can make money, this is my career, this is my, you know.
Yeah.
And you really have to be on the alert of what feels authentic.
Yeah, very discerning, because there are some people that are really, really taking advantage, and they're actually doing actual harm. You know, they're questionable people to be even teaching in the first place. You have to be very, very careful. There's been some serious, serious things happen, as we well know. So, be very, very careful.
Yeah. Well, and the goddess spirituality movement, and my thought about that is they're going, because that's a sort of the Euro roots that you even talk about in your book of Indigenous knowledge from our European roots. The goddess spirituality movement comes from there, the ancient European cultures and the matriarchy.
Absolutely,
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, there isn't that much cultural appropriation in goddess spirituality or matriarchal studies. I would say that where I was seeing it was in the New Age spirituality. I know there's a crossover with goddess spirituality and matriarchal studies, but the only cultural appropriation really happening would be doing work with a goddess from another tradition. A good example is white buffalo calf woman, who you see, you know, used over and over and over and over and over by so many non-Native women. Granted, it's an archetype, but you also have to understand that the Lakota people object to that use. So this is, you know, something we have to think about in an ethical way, even though other goddesses from our own traditions we can do work with. So I think it's, you have to look at the source culture and would those people approve of you using, doing work with their particular goddess. That's what you have to be asking yourself, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly begs a lot of, you know, of study, realizing this and not, and realizing the impact it has on another group of people.
Exactly. And it's an extension of colonization. First, the colonizer comes in and takes the land, and that's the first thing. And then the resources are taken. That's the second thing. And then the third thing is elements of the cultural identity are taken. This is a phenomena that's happened all over Turtle Island. You can chart it with every single First Nation. And so in a really bizarre, horrible way, cultural appropriation is an extension of that same genocide because it's erasing the cultural and spiritual identity of the people that you're taking from. So it's actually an extension, like genocide is still happening today. When you really, that's the worst I could say about it, right?
Well, that's interesting because people may think that they're honoring it. You know, I'm studying it. Mm-hmm. I honor the, you know, and not understanding the level, what also it brings about. Well, what is what is the difference between a cultural appropriation and cultural exchange?
So you do have to look at the societies. Is one a colonizer or is one the colonized? And it just goes, you know, to the historical takeover of that country. Did the colonizer come in by force? And certainly that's been the case here in the USA and Canada. So if that's the relationship, it's cultural appropriation. It's not a share of a free sharing. The cultures can come together and freely share with each other, but they have to be on equal footing. One is not dominating the other. The minute one is dominating the other in any colonizer-colonized relationship, then it becomes cultural appropriation. It's not an exchange anymore. It's taken under force or ignorance, either way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we're aware of, you know, yes, we, you know, the settlers came and, you know, Native American,
right.
First Nation are on reservations now the difficulty that they have and all that. And yet, how do we still keep that colonization mentality alive? You know, what's our responsibility? What's our role that continues that colonization?
We just have to be aware of it in ourselves. And there's, you know, definitely ways. I think Earth's spirituality shifts us away from that mindset. You know, we can think in different ways, in more holistic ways. These are all indigenous ways of thinking and being in the world. So it's a learning curve to take up all these new ways, but it's definitely doable by any person. And, you know, we are all, we're indigenous at some point in our history if you align with your ethnicity. And ethnicity itself has become sort of a lost category in the U.S. and Canada. Nobody even understands why it would be important anymore, you know, to have an ethnicity because we're not used to having it. We're like, the only people with ethnicity are like ethnic groups, right? It isn't like white people even have it anymore. So I just think that's really strange.
Yeah.
Well, your ethnicity is your Scottish or, you know, where did your ancestors come from? I know those are countries, but I had my DNA tested and I am a Celtic DNA, right? My DNA does not come from North America. My DNA comes from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no escaping that fact. Right.
Yeah. And there's a lot of mixed stuff. I mean, you know, some people don't know what their heritage is
exactly.
You know, well, I'm German part, you know, British part, this part, that. And so there's kind of a loss of that. I'm 100% Norwegian and it's kind of a rarity. So
yeah.
I know my father came from Norway. So it's very, I think when you're first generation, you're much more in tune with it. But when you've gone a few centuries, that it gets kind of lost. And so there's a big, you know, search on for your ancestry. You know, they have the TV shows and you can do your DNA now and see where
That's
you're from.
Exciting. Yeah.
So that's very interesting. So
I think it's wonderful to find out what your roots are. I think it's the most empowering thing to sort of know your family history going back through time. It's just so exciting and it's so empowering to know where you're actually from in a way. And then you can explore the history, you can, you know, get into the myth, you can get into the literature that's available. You can learn all about those ancient traditions sort of going back. I know we have to go back a long, long way in some cases, but I mean, people are doing it and the resources are all there with internet these days and all these incredible resources and libraries. There's just so much reference material to delve into and, you know, yes, get your DNA tested. So there's no excuse for not going back to your traditions. I know the DNA test costs about, I think it's around $90 now, but, you know, it's a good
investment.
Down in price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is kind of fascinating. I think one of the most fascinating things that people say is like, I'm 10% Neanderthal, or I know somebody who's 5% unknown. It's kind of like, oh, okay.
Wow.
Is that, what's that, alien?
That is so amazing. I know. I just love that whole idea. I had mine traced with a company in the UK, and it went back something like 35,000 years. And the exciting thing now is through archaeology, they know the human remains all over the planet. They're able to take the DNA from the human remains, so they know the geography, like where your DNA has gone, where your people sort of like traveled through time. So that didn't happen until about 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. This is brand new science.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, it
DNA
is, yeah,
is now connected to geography. It's just astounding.
Yeah, and you talk a lot in your book about going back to those, you call it EIK, you know, mm-hmm, the IK being indigenous knowledge of the people,
yes,
of the land here, and the EIK are Euro roots and finding those.
Yes.
Well, this is Chris Stainis. You're listening to Voices of Women. We'll come back and talk more with Peggy Ayres.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Do you want to achieve your goals? Do you want to strengthen relationships with others? Do you want to improve your financial status? Colette Marie Steffen is partnering with Mark Kettenbach to bring you an energetic upgrade online experience launching in April. Unfold and develop your full potential. Visit energeticupgrade.com today for more information. That's energeticupgrade.com.
The doctor is in. Tune in to the hit show, The Psychic Love Doctor, with host Deborah Lee. Deborah's life-affirming, highly perceptive reading method has taught Deborah how to zero in on specific problems with relationships, career pursuits, and current roadblocks to success and happiness. Join Deborah Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific and for a special broadcast the second Thursday of every month at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Sky Siegel co-hosts one of today's most popular psychic shows, Angels and Answers, with Artie Hoffman as she communicates healing messages from the spirit world. These messages can be astounding, enlightening, and life-changing. Born with the God-given talent of inner guidance and the amazing ability to heal, Sky has healed thousands of people. Schedule a reading with Sky now. Call 908-500-1474 and visit skyofangels.com.
Hey everyone, meet my friends at the Maca team. The ancient Inca root vegetable Maca is known worldwide for its huge array of health benefits. As a family-run company of true Maca specialists, the Maca team is here to bring you the best Maca the Peruvian mountains has to offer. Yellow Maca, used to promote endurance, vitality, fertility, hormone health, and much more, is on sale now. I love it. Visit themacateam.com to order yours now. Themacateam.com.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis, and I'm talking with Peggy Aris today. We're talking about her book, Ancient Spirit Rising. So, Peggy, perhaps it's a good time for you to give your website information where people can find out more about you and your book and who you're,
yeah, my
what
website.
You're about.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Yes, my website is www.stonecirclepress.com, all one word. And the book is available through the website, and it's also on Amazon.com.
Okay, great. Yeah, I encourage people to pick up the book if this topic interests you. It's been a fascinating read for me, and there's just so much information. And I think one of the things I think it's important to get, because you go back and forth a bit, and sometimes I think you almost have to read the whole book or get to a certain point where you realize this whole picture that you're really trying to paint. And one of them is that it is okay to learn from these indigenous cultures. It opens the door for people to for spirituality, you know, or interest in learning about their own indigenous background. You know,
I think definitely, I think that learning, exactly what you're saying, I think it kind of can even restructure our thinking process. If we spend a lot of time with Indigenous people, we start to see the world differently. We start to think differently, and these are all things we need to be doing. So it's just, you know, shifting into what I like to call Indigenous mind, and just for yourself to be able to think in a more mystical or more, animism is a good description, but to just, you know, start thinking in a different way than what you've been accustomed to, because I think it's really going to be important in the future as mm-hmm. we even get more regional. I think bioregionalism is going to be a very important thing to just get really connected to our local ecosystems and our local communities in the future, and to shift away from all the amenities of civilization. I think we're going to be faced with living off the land at some point in the future. So, you know, even better to start making that shift these days, right, while we have the resources.
Yes, and there's a lot of movement, especially, you know, I mean, the Pacific Northwest, there's a lot of movement towards eating locally. And,
yes.
And there's stores now that have, you know, they state, oh, this is locally grown, and you know, of course, the big movement of organic food. But the locally grown is important, because if something was to happen and you don't have the trucks to deliver the food, you know, it's we're not going to have the oranges from Florida or California, the fruit from California. We have to, and also with that native, being aware of the native traditions is, you know, being closer to the earth spirituality, that I think that's one of the things that people connect with that we've kind of lost in our white culture.
Yes, exactly. And even the practical elements of nature, they will know where there's certain food sources, you know, in the ecosystem. And if we have in a good way, come to First Nations that are in our bioregion, they'll, you know, help us or teach us, or we can find out on our own. What are the edible plants? You know, what's been harvested here for hundreds of years? So just that wealth of traditional ecological knowledge is held by First Nations. And, you know, in the right way that there's hopefully going to be sharing between the communities. And this is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've been living on a piece of land for hundreds of years. What better people, you know, to be able to inform the rest of us?
So I want to talk about one of the topics in your book. You talk about allyship in your and so tell us what that is and what it does towards, you know, social justice, and what does that mean?
Just, yes, it's just an extension of social justice work. So we're, you know, protesting, we're resisting, there's so many things wrong, we're out, you know, doing petitions and marches and demonstrations, and it just shifts us to centering the Indigenous community at the center, and whatever work that they're doing in their struggle, we are following their lead, and this is quite a huge thing that came up during the Idle No More movement here in Canada. Allyship was became extremely important, because there are all these non-Native people that really had a heartfelt response to the movement and really wanted to help in any way they could. But allyship's been, as a theory, it came out of an academic collaboration about 20 years ago, and it's a fantastic framework. And it's the Indigenous community, or whatever community. You could be an ally for LGBT community. You could be an ally for disabled or poverty community, whatever. Feminist, even, you know, so those are the leaders of the movement, and you just sort of follow, you know, their lead. There's other things that allies do, and it's about not being at the center of the movement for a change. So take a back seat. That's kind of the primary element of allyship. It's very rewarding work, and you have to have a lot of empathy, which is a fantastic new movement happening these days with empathy studies and so on. So it encompasses all of that. It's a fantastic framework for working with First Nations.
Mm-hmm. And so what I'm hearing from you is, like, we have such strong drive to be the leader and step out in front and lead this social cause and speak out there. And then where's the listening to, well, what do the Indigenous people want? What are they really calling for? And
exactly.
That thing that you're saying of, like, sit back and listen.
Yeah,
it's probably very important.
Yeah, because they know exactly what they need to do, and you just, you know, let the Indigenous people lead for a change. And there's a funny thing too about this called people have labeled this impulse to sort of be always in charge. They call it the white savior complex. That's really funny. You can actually Google it. It's very funny. But it's what we do, right? White people like to be in charge. I can't make a generalization, but it's pretty true.
But it makes me kind of feel like that's also connected to that the guilt that white people's guilt.
I suppose so, but I don't actually see guilt as a factor. And I learned that early on when I was taking up social justice, and I don't think guilt is of any use whatsoever. I mean, we weren't around at the time when our ancestors and so on first came here. We don't hold that same worldview. And I just think, you know, the guilt, maybe you would feel guilty like for a week or like a couple of days, but, you know, get over it, because it's so completely useless to sort of have that. I think you're only guilty if you actually did something personally, and we weren't around at the time, so we can't really, you know, have any guilty feelings. I just think the best response is just to have a sense of responsibility. And then that leads to action, so it's better than the guilt response anyway.
Mm-hmm. And so how do we take the responsibility? What do you suggest people should do?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like an ethical choice, and you decide to help out, find out what First Nations community are nearest to where you're living, and, you know, what are their current challenges? Are they, you know, in court fighting something? Is it a land claims issue? Is there any thing that they need help with? And then what you touched on earlier when we spoke at a break about, you know, educating our own white cohort. This is extremely important too, and sometimes white people are more open to hearing about these issues from other white people. So that's a huge component, too, is to just, you know, keep the education going and teach people, you know, racism still exists. We don't live in an anti-racist society yet. We're far from it. What are the things we can be doing? You know, be aware of the, you know, implicit bias in yourself. You have a little bit of ingrained racism, and it, you know, we just can't help it. We're born into a society that teaches us that since we're, you know, babies. So, you know, just be aware of it when it comes up, and over time you'll get better and better at at steering clear of any element of racism in your own life. So, you know, deconstructing these ideas for yourself and others, it's a lot of education.
Yeah, and it's really looking at your internal languaging and being aware and watching being aware of what is a racist thought, what is a bias inside yourself.
Exactly.
Sometimes there's voices in your head that you go, where did that even come from? I don't feel that way. And so, passed down from generation to generation, and there's these things that just doesn't even relate to today's world.
And I know it's so true, and it's just good to be honest about it. And there's a lot of people in social justice that are very open about sharing. They'll go, oh, there's something else. Where did that come from? But, you know, just to be aware of it. One of the top anti-racist people in the USA, Tim Wise, he tells a story. He was going to get on a plane. He noticed that the pilot and the co-pilot were both black. And he actually stopped and hesitated before he got on the plane. And this is the top anti-racist person, or in my view, and he's just fantastic. And he tells this story. He shares it with people just to illustrate that, we're always trying to, at least we're aware of this bias inside, but he's subject to these thoughts from time to time. Right.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Of course.
It is amazing what we think, because I think I was on, I think it was the Vietnamese airline this winter, and getting on the plane, hearing an Australian, the captain had an Australian accent, and it's kind of like, oh, an Australian, it's not a Vietnamese, and just looking at that, first it was just surprising, because you just expected Vietnamese pilots, and then there's that other voice that kind of goes, oh, good, and it's kind of like, what's that about,
I know. It's like we're so ingrained with these toxic ideas. But, we live in a white European hyper-patriarchal society. So, it's no wonder we're a little bit crazy, right? Look what we've had to deal with.
All of us,
we've been so brainwashed.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to take another break. This is Chris Stanis. We'll come back, talk more with Peggy Ayres.
Ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker? Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Are you searching?
Looking for a sign?
For a sign?
A message you need to hear? From the great unknown? From the most mysterious place that is the most familiar to your soul in the depths of who you are? The universe put someone here to talk to. Someone God gave a blessing to that you may find insight with. TheAngelLady.net. 1-800-323-1790. 1-800-323-1790.
Awaken to your radiant, authentic self. For over 15 years, Soul Purpose Advocate Nancy Monson has been focused on leading change in the lives of those looking to live their true purpose. She is devoted to supporting people in living a soul-directed life every day. Let Nancy help you overcome fear, worry, and doubt. Visit everydayspirituality.com to learn how Nancy can be your Soul Purpose Advocate.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Have you ever tried to make lifestyle changes but had difficulty following through? Imagine what it would be like to get up each morning with energy, clarity, and motivation to tackle the day. If you want to get past limiting barriers that are preventing you from living your best life, join holistic health and wellness coach T. Carrie Mitchell each month on The Dr. Pat Show. Or visit lifestyle120.com today and start to receive the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. So we've been talking about the Indigenous cultures with Peggy Ayers. And Peggy, we're going to I'd love to talk about, because you have a section in your book comparing modern thinking, Western mind, and ancestral thinking, Indigenous mind. And so let's talk about how those are different and what the Western mind might learn from the Indigenous mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I was able to clarify some of those differences. And there's, you know, elements of Western mind that are useful. We don't want to, you know, completely shift away from all of our Western thinking. But there's so many valuable ways to go forward in Indigenous mind. So Western thinking is very mechanistic, very disembodied material. It seems to be a lot about control. And it's like full of this logic of domination when we look at the English language, sort of like a power over dynamic keeps coming up in modern thinking. And in contrast, Indigenous mind is more of, dwelling in an animistic universe, aligning with the sacred is very important. And we focus more on opening the heart, you know, compassionate thinking, being intuitive, bringing out those empathic qualities, you know, grounding bodies, grounding with the land, bonding with the land, sort of holistic thinking. And I can go over a couple of the examples of what Western thinking would be, and then in contrast, what Indigenous mind would be, if you'd like me to do that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. So here's just some examples, and then I'll give the contrast. So Western mind, bounded by the ego and set apart from others. And then Indigenous mind or ancestral thinking, connected, empathic, and resonating with others. So see quite the difference. Western thinking is self-absorbed. Ancestral thinking is physically grounded and embodied. Western thinking is very dualistic. It's kind of this either-or dynamic happening all the time. Kind of makes your thinking quite fragmented. And then ancestral thinking is non-dualistic. It's more of a holistic flow in your thinking. I think Western mind is very restless, lives in the past and the future. And then I think with Indigenous mind or ancestral thinking, our restless mind is more suspended. We're involved in this more cyclical form of thinking, like a spiral that doesn't have a beginning or an end, more of being in that immediate flow. And I think Western thinking, our Western mind is always wanting to control and acquire objects or even experiences or whatever. And I think Indigenous mind is more just having a sense of the mystery and just seeing life with this sense of wonder and awe. It isn't about acquiring, it's about just honoring the mystery of life. And then I think I came to the conclusion at the end of this comparison, because Western thinking has an ego egocentric bias, I think it produces some, plus we don't have a good rites of passage movement yet that gets us safely through adolescence and brings us into adulthood. I think we're kind of like a lot of people in this culture. There's a whole phenomena called infantilization where we don't really grow into adulthood, which you can see in certain people. I'm not going to name names, but I'm thinking of someone in politics at the moment. Anyway, I think it produces, so this egocentric bias kind of produces the thinking that is more dysfunctional. It's like an immature way of thinking and almost bordering on immoral, because they're kind of like never, they haven't actually gone through adolescence. So they're kind of like, you know, stuck in that moment in time. And then in contrast, I was able to find that ancestral thinking has an ecocentric foundation as opposed to the egocentric. And then in an indigenous society or an ancestral tradition, we would integrate this self-discovery, integrate our soul, integrate the wisdom, which moves us forward into responsibility to go fully into our adulthood. So quite a difference. And I'll just do one more.
Sure.
The Western thinking has a belief that intelligence is only quantified. It's only described as coming from logic and from linear thinking. And then our indigenous mind and our ancestral thinking, all of our intelligences are combined. We have the intelligence of the body, the intelligence of our emotions, the intelligence of our spirit, and the intelligence of our heart. So this comes into a holistic potential, and we move along toward this amazing status of becoming a true human being, which is our purpose coming into the earth plane.
Well, and some of the things you're describing, it could be, you know, oftentimes those kinds of those comparisons are patriarchy and the matriarchy, or masculine thinking and feminine, and that's not gender thing, but, you know, the masculine and the feminine mind. Because a lot of those indigenous mindsets that you talked about very much are feminine attributes. And
absolutely. And I really see that in a lot of study of indigenous societies. A lot of scholars just come right out and say this is very feminine, you know, based. I was at a conference last weekend, and it was, it was nothing to do with gender, but the whole title of the conference was Bringing Back the Sacred Feminine. And this was coming from First Nations. So I think it's pretty common to say that these days, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something we've been working on in Women Wisdom for a long time, and for women to and for women to embrace it, because we've been shut off from it too, to look inside ourselves when we reject the feminine voice and when we don't respect it, and because it's not respected out there in society, it's the, you know, the action,
right,
and the go get 'em and the tough language and all that,
yeah,
that's honored, and the feminine voice isn't honored so much, and so we have shut up.
Yeah.
And we're seeing women stopping that now and speaking up and getting more powerful, and that is going to continue to grow, I'm sure, because women are coming together. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Peggy. It was great to talk with you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the platform. Thank you.
So everybody, check out her book. Her website is www.stonecirclepress.com. That's stonecirclepress.com. The book is, the full title is Ancient Spirit Rising, Reclaiming Your Roots and Restoring Earth Community by Peggy Ayers. That's EYERS. Well, great. Well, again, a reminder, May 3rd, next Tuesday, is Give Big Day in Seattle. We appreciate any donations. It's a great time now to help us continue our work going into our 25th year. And we're very much in need of some funds to make a great 25th year and to continue doing this work in Seattle. So just go to www.givebigseattlefoundation.org and then just search for Women of Wisdom Foundation. Your donations are stretched, and also your donation could be a golden ticket. They're going to draw names of people who've donated, and who they gave to will get a $1,000 bonus, which is a fabulous extra bonus for Women of Wisdom. So we appreciate that. Also, a reminder, our big fundraiser event is our Sacred Pampering Day for Women in Seattle is June 4th. It's our annual fundraiser, and there's still room for booths for if you're a healer, psychic reader, body worker, come share your gifts with our community. And you can contact us. Our email is wow@womenofwisdom.org. And you can go to find out information and how to apply, go to the website www.thewowconference.org. And at last moment, just check out my book, Woman of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and Spirit of Woman. It's award-winning and also an Amazon bestseller from June 2009. I did a campaign, and it's a compilation of stories of the divine feminine from many different viewpoints and art and poetry and stories. So I welcome you to check that out. Okay, so our time is up. I hope everybody has a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. Tune in each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for Voices of Women Today, radio with Chris Stainis.